This is a Cyber Union Podcast, episode 87. Yes, Indie Ref, yes.
Scotland, and with me is
Stephen in No, this is not Mexico City. This is Scotland in Glasgow.
Stephen, are you in Glasgow?
How'd you get here? Are we on the same mic? No, this can't be possible. We're face to face and seeing each other in 3D. This is so fucking weird. We've never done this before.
Welcome to Glasgow.
And thank you.
It's an entirely different experience to record a podcast in 3D.
Not online. It certainly is, and I'm going to make this point right now. I've known you for, over 3 years now, and I remember you telling me numerous times how cloudy and gloomy this city is, as the sun is shining directly into my eye.
See, this is what Stephen does. He turns up in midsummer in Scotland, gets one single stream of sunlight piercing the otherwise overwhelming cloud and complains that it's too sunny, and I really think the next time he comes should be in early January.
Yes, and I'm sure I'll bring the sun, because every time I tell other people here, they said, well, you should keep coming back to bring the sun with you. So maybe it's just my presence. I might have that good of a presence, I see.
Well, try it. Come in January and see what happens. So where have you been? It's been months since we've recorded a podcast. What's been going on?
A lot, actually. I don't even know where to honestly start. I know the last episode we did was May 1st, and I don't even know how much shit has happened in between then and now, as we're dealing with political uprisings going on in Gaza right now, and attacks everywhere else, as well as just a lot of stuff. I just can't even start to imagine where I started from, but I know all I've been doing is a lot of stuff on Civi CRM. I've picked up too much of the Civi CRM in the time, which is good actually in a lot of ways, but also been doing a couple projects with Glocal, of course. And that's expanding as we go forward. I believe we've been doing something with Glocal with Earth Learning, which is an organization out of Florida, and getting them set up on a Civi CRM instance. You actually have been learning some of that too, haven't you?
Well, yes, I have. I've been learning Civi CRM. Isn't my life exciting? Thank you for bringing Civi CRM to my life. I feel more fulfilled now.
Yeah, yeah. But I've been in Mexico. You've been traveling the world. What have you been up to?
Yeah, I have. I've been doing lots of travel for work. I've been to Geneva a couple of times. I've been to The Hague. I've been to Turin. I've been to Loughborough.
Uh-huh.
I've been to Portsmouth, and quite recently to Barnsley.
Barnsley. It's
been very, very exciting. And what brings you to Scotland? Why are you here?
I don't know.
It's like, why are you in my lounge sitting at my table complaining about my sunshine?
I just came for the clouds and I got the sun instead. I think it started it's becoming a tradition now. Last year was to meet you in 3D. That was, you know, weird for 2 seconds. and you got me hooked on the Global Labor Institute. And last year you started this discussion about a yes vote, which I was curious to hear about more. Mm-hmm. And seeing that it's coming up, but we'll talk about that in a bit. So I came back for the Global Labor Institute summer school initially. Then I was supposed to go on vacation. And see, my vacation got cut down because I got another job.
Yeah. Jobs suck, man.
Yeah, I know.
Better not do that stuff.
Well, I keep getting jealous every time I talk to somebody in this region of the world, whether it be the UK or Europe. Everybody tells me they have 5 weeks of vacation. What the hell is five? I get five. Like in the US, you're lucky if you get 5 days for the year, not 5 weeks. So definitely jealous of that. So I might be taking a vacation even later today to Edinburgh, but we'll see how that goes. I got to work on my Scottish accent. That's the other reason I'm here.
Okay.
And to drink good beer.
Perhaps don't test it on the podcast.
Yeah. And to drink good beer, which I did do the other night, actually, with a pod crawl. I met Kevi and McNallu from the days of Identica to now the days of GNU Social, which was really cool to actually see them and as well as in 3D, and had a good time at the Pot Still, which is a whiskey bar, but I didn't actually end up having any whiskey. I ended up having beer and a really good one, the Innis and Gum Rum Finish beer.
Innis and Gum Rum Finish is a good beer, yes.
Yeah, that this is a beer that is put into a rum, or formerly a barrel that was used for rum. So it gets a nice finish of that rum flavor to it. I really enjoyed that a lot, I got to say. And bought McNallow a Bowmore 10, I think it's a 10-year whiskey, which I know he enjoyed. So, yeah, it was a good time. Lots of politics, a lot of discussions that I wasn't actually anticipating, to be honest. I did not know too much of their politics, although I've followed them along the ways. We talked about Scotland again. We'll get to the yes vote on that in a bit. But yeah, that was, I mean, I don't want to go on forever talking about what's happened since May 1st. Mm-hmm. Because it's just way too much.
All right. Well, shall we talk about last week?
Yeah, we should actually get into wonderful world of tech, which I think I'm going to have to do the editing on this later, so we're not going to get our wonderful segue. So we could just assume there's a segue there.
Segue!
The wonderful world of tech.
Which for you is computers.
I think we're involved in technology too much for the last week, so much that it is so fucking exhausting. Where do you want to start we did?
So this is where we were. We were at this thing called the Global Labour Institute International Summer School 2014, which is a school and conference, I guess, for what you could call global alt-labour, kind of the alternative, more interesting, cutting-edge trade unionists from around the world. And it really is a remarkable event. There's around 100 people who come, and they come from all over the world, from Eastern Europe, from India, from the Philippines, from Hong Kong, from South Africa, and really from all over. It's the third time I've been to this event, and the people who turn up are people who are at the absolute coalface and the cutting edge of global trade unionism, global class struggle, the really most interesting edge of the trade union movement, and they all have really wonderful, inspiring politics, and to be at that event is great. For someone like me, it feels like almost like family, or you know, like it's not often that I'm able to spend a whole week with so many people who think very much like I do, and the program is fantastic because you get these plenary sessions with people who are absolute experts in whatever their particular field is, and then there are these really interesting and inspiring discussion groups afterwards, and you know, where we kind of talk and debate these things. What Stephen and I were doing was trying to capture all of this using technology and making it available, making an interactive online element available to it. So that included live streaming the plenary sessions, maintaining the Twitter feed, capturing pictures for Instagram, live blogging, uploading the slides to slide sharing site, and essentially making sure that everything that was happening in the conference room was simultaneously available online and that people could participate from all over the world. And it was very hard work. It was there's a huge amount of attention to detail going on, and to be honest, didn't actually enjoy the tech stuff that much because when you're doing that level of tech work, there are too many variables, mm-hmm. and you only control some of them. There are some of those variables that you can control and you can make sure they work well, but there are others which are just beyond your control, and that includes elements of proprietary software or internet connections and networks and the experience of other users and all sorts of things like that. So, Stephen, what was your experience of the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, that was the challenging part, was maintaining the tech structures. I mean, we're so used to just having our laptop in front of us, but then you have the people that are in the plenaries, the people that are at the tables, and then people asking questions from the audiences and further discussions, which we didn't have exceptional levels of technology that we could utilize in the room and set up in the entire room. So we couldn't put like a microphone out by where people were sitting to talk. So the microphone that was where the people, the panelists were speaking, was the microphone that we're using to connect to everybody. But then maintaining the camera angles and making sure that the quality is decent, and then making sure the streamline stays okay, which was also a struggle because we had to deal with an IT department that insisted numerous times that their Wi-Fi infrastructure was phenomenal. And that's, we don't need to wire in. Now, I don't know how many of you out there have dealt with that, but I much prefer wired when we're dealing with a shared Wi-Fi that everybody else in the room is going to be using, because then you have the separations of the two. If you're unwired, you're not going to be interfering with wireless, and wireless is not going to be interfering with wired. And that became a bit of a struggle. So fortunately, well, sort of the first day we ran into that trouble. We had bad quality streaming. Finally, by the end of that day, we were able to convince the IT department that we needed a wired connection, which they had some weird firewall set up that prevented it. But once that happened, things improved much better for the next couple of days for the streaming side of things. But then Thursday.
Yeah, and we also have a love-hate relationship with Google, don't we?
Yes, we do. And so people know we had to use Google Hangout for the streaming because it streamlined a lot of the connectivity of it. And we didn't have enough time to actually test the network to do other streaming structures. Though we hope if we do this again next year that we'll have a much better setup to be utilizing an Icecast stream to do the streaming part of it, still recording it locally and then uploading it for the various hosting places like YouTube and everywhere else.
Yeah, so the reason we used Hangout was just because of, you know, for workflow reasons, it's a really quick and easy way to do it, because for each session, I was able to create a Hangout event ahead of time, which had all the details in it, uploaded images for it, was available, and I could share those links beforehand, so I could send out a mass mailing before the conference started with the times of all the sessions and links to them, so people could just click on those events and watch them live. So that was really useful to be able to set up those events. And when it was time to actually do the Hangout, all I needed to do was open the event, start it, and it would stream from that link, from that location, making it really easy for people to follow. And the handy thing about it is that 10 minutes after the event is finished, the video is available on YouTube, and I can add it to a playlist, and that playlist is already embedded in the front page of our website. So anyone coming to the website looking for the sessions is able to see that event without me doing any work. And really the reason we did this was for workflow, to cut out time, because to do it any other way would have involved more work. It would have involved some editing work, some upload, and essentially I was kind of working 12 hour days anyway, getting all the stuff online, and to add more elements to it would have been unfortunate. But the problem, so yeah, I really appreciate the fact that Hangouts is quite easy to use. Unfortunately, it's unreliable. Partly it's because Google keeps changing it. It's kind of cutting edge. So I use Hangouts a lot for work. I'm at least once a week I do a live Hangout, often more than that. And it changes so often, and things that work one day don't work the next day. And yeah, it's under constant development, but it makes it really hard to use because it's inconsistent. And if you have to have calls with other people, it's really sometimes difficult to get them to understand how to use it because the interface isn't always straightforward. And once again, because it changes, it's much harder for an ordinary user to use than something like Skype or something that they're used to. So yeah, we were kind of annoyed with Google, and at one point it just stopped working. we had no reason at all. It just the Hangout just would not go live. It wasn't connection speed. The connection was fine.
It was Google being Google.
Google being Google, and yeah, because they don't do... Google does have customer support that you can contact, but that's only for advertising. So if you're paying them money, you can phone a call center and they'll rapidly sort your problems out. But if you're having a technical problem with Google, that's just tough.
Yeah, and just so people have an idea too, there's development towards trying to meet these things from a free and open source perspective on it. And part of this is actually some of the stuff that we could touch on of getting funding towards developing the Mexico system that May 1st does. Because I imagine, I at least envision down the road that service will have some way to do streaming automatically down the road. So it's a good learning experience to take from what Google is doing to try to figure out how we can adapt it. I know a comrade in Mexico has actually done some work on that, but it requires pretty extensive internet connections, and it's not streamlined yet. So there's some element and some development that's going into it. And it's unfortunately using the enemy to figure out how the enemy works to then figure out how we can build it better. But it was a challenge. I know there are a number of times that we figured out methods to streamline our work, and then we ended up getting more work where I kept having to elbow you to switch the slides because we were doing screen sharing with it. So Walton would have the presentation up, and he'd be literally clicking it as the person that was doing the presentation on the overhead would do it. And eventually we got that working towards the end of this, towards the end of the week, so that... Well, actually, no, we never did get it working, well, did we?
We got it working, except that was the day that it wouldn't live stream.
Yeah.
So once we managed to streamline and get everything running absolutely perfectly, we decided this was the Thursday, which is the second last day of the conference. We thought that we had finally worked out a really streamlined way of doing this. It was going to be absolutely stress-free. We're going to have an amazing day.
Yeah.
We'd actually have the time to listen to the interventions instead of just running around trying to get the tech working. Had it all set up, it was all perfect. We click go. Nothing happened and it wouldn't live stream.
So we had our backup system, which was much more involved, recording it in high definition on another camera that we then would upload to YouTube. But I mean, it, just for people to keep in mind, we're dealing with a lot of labor folks, labor union members and activists that are not used to technology being an issue necessarily from like right there. They're, you know, expecting us to be able to maintain everything. And when shit hits the fan, they're looking at us like, well, why don't you fix it? And it's just like, well, we can't fix the internet. It's not our problem. And I mean, the one thing that Walton and I were debriefing about is, you know, the benefit of like in this case, May 1st and a consortium trying to put this together, trying to figure out how to run this type of streaming on our own and putting it in a method. It makes it easier for us to debug because we can go directly into the server and find out. Whereas, you know, obviously not just proprietary, but when it's a service that may be free and open source, that's run by some other organization, you may not have direct access to trying to figure out what the issues and connectivity problems may be. But it was a challenging week. It was stressful. I think this year was much better than last year, I think, overall. I think last year we were so stressed running all over the place that I barely had the chance to even pay attention to any of the content of the panels, whereas this year I actually remember paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. And was able to actually talk to a number of people that were there about some of the technology tools that we are using, such as CBCRM that we previously mentioned, as methods of maintaining membership and organizing. And that seems like it has planted some seeds in a couple of heads for possible discussions down the road on what they can do. And so there's a lot of hope with it. There's a lot that we learned and a lot of phenomenal panels. And I've had the honor to meet Bill Fletcher, you as well. If people are not familiar with him, you should definitely look up his work, and I'll try to put a link into some of his work. But he was the one that I studied a lot in graduate school, and was just like, it took coming to the UK and to meet him. And he's a very approachable person, and is very interesting just because a lot of people immediately understood that he had Black Panther experience and has a lot of critiques and valid critiques within the movements and within socialist Marxist communities as well. So it was really, really intriguing. And I just had a really good time. Met a phenomenal amount of people, some that I'll be taking connections back when I go back to the U.S., which, for all you don't know, I'll be moving there in September.
Yeah, and I guess what I took out of it is that it wasn't just a school and a conference. It really felt like we were building a movement, getting together just some of the best people in the movement today and getting them networked and communicating with each other. And we'd like to use things like CBCRM to help with the technical side of that movement building and getting people connected to each other. As obviously you realize, we did record all of this. It is all online, and it really was an amazing conference. So
we did record
we
it.
Did
I thought I deleted it. Them all afterwards.
It is all online. So if you want to check out some really really fantastic cutting edge political and union content, it's all at usilive.org/ISS14.
Yeah.
And also there's some stuff on the ISS14 hashtag on Twitter, and probably also on Google Plus and Facebook and places like that.
Yeah, and I want to re-emphasize that there's a lot there. I mean, it's from labor history and understanding how where we are to this day, and really great discussions on the over global macro element of what the system is looking like. I mean, these are all different sessions that have different videos that are really go into great detail, and ones that will cause a tremendous amount of controversy and discussion. And that was part of the idea of these plenaries. So we want to encourage you all to watch them and discuss them as well with us in the various social networks that we're on, because I think they're really good content for not just the people that were there, but for everybody that can actually take a look at them.
Yeah, and some of the subjects included things like trade union responses to climate change, and it was quite a heated discussion with a pro-environmentalist, really, really good intervention, and then an opposing view of someone who called it all sort of fairy dust, and actually quite a robust intervention from a Scottish trade unionist. It's an entertaining watch, because he essentially walked into a room where people are nodding along to this whole climate change thing and threw a grenade.
Yeah.
Which was good. And then there was some really good discussion also about the relationship between trade unions and political parties. There's a session called The Slow Death of the Socialist International, which is about essentially the sellout of social democratic parties. Things about organizing precarious workers and just generally a lot of really, really fantastic content that deserves a wide audience.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Really a great time. Phenomenal amount of people from all over the world. It was just great to see that. Although the Latin America was not attending this year. Last year they had one delegate from there, but it would be nice to see if they can get more for next year. I don't claim myself to be from there, even though I was coming from Mexico City. But yeah, so wow, that's a lot in action packed, and we haven't even hit the labor section of this discussion.
Okay, so shall we just do a relatively short section on
labor?
The next bit. Well, I don't know if it's labor, but
I guess it's not labor. But I think it. I don't know if it's going to be short, because I think there's a lot that can go into it. Not to try to extend it, but
the pay's not great, but the work is hard. Are you up for it?
Being in Scotland, I've run into many people that have said no, and many people who have said yes. And I think it's more people that have said yes. What are they saying yes or no to about, Walton?
Right, so on the 18th of September, Scotland faces a referendum on whether it wants to be an independent country, whether it wants to break away from the United Kingdom and become an independent country. And it's become a really, really interesting debate, which splits along all sorts of really strange and interesting lines. The no camp is supported by kind of all the establishment political parties, so the Conservatives and the Lib Dems, but also Labour have got together in this camp that they call Better Together. And essentially that is the British establishment saying that they're better together. And from the Labour people, there's a bit of a left-wing argument that they attempt to make about class solidarity across borders, and a bus driver in Glasgow's got more in common with a bus driver in Liverpool than a laird in the Highlands. And they're making that kind of argument. The problem is it wears quite thin because of growing inequality in the UK, the fact that the NHS is being privatised in England, the fact that they're growing food banks, and the fact that the Labour government, even if it does win the 2015 elections, has promised to maintain the programme of austerity. So this idea of the UK social welfare model is completely off the table. It's not on the agenda anymore. In opposition to this is the Yes movement. The biggest component of the Yes movement is the Scottish National Party, which is actually not really a traditional nationalist party. It's a kind of centre-left, light social democratic party, which has essentially arguing for Scottish independence from the point of view more of local democracy than nationalism. Now, the No camp tends to characterise the pro-independence supporters as being kind of flag-waving, nationalist, braveheart fanatics. They have been actually quite disgusting in many cases, comparing Yes supporters to Nazis and, young Yes supporters to being the Hitler Youth. The whole campaign from No has been around fear and negativity, and we've been bombarded with absolutely unbelievable scare stories from No, including things like the big ones like you won't have a currency because the UK will take away your ability to use the pound, you'll be kicked out of Europe, you'll be kicked out of NATO, the fact that Scotland's not in NATO will, and this is a quote, allow the forces of darkness to be unleashed as Islamic terror rips its way through the established Western order due to the weakness of the Scots. England will be forced to bomb Scotland's borders. There will be razor wire and guard towers, like, separating England and Scotland. It's just, like, really fucking horrible, nasty stuff which is coming out of people. Really quite disgusting, negative campaigning. The official Yes campaign has been a bit fluffy. I mean, they have, I guess, what would be... I would call pretty much one of the most inspiring manifestos from mainstream politics I've seen in a really, really long time, because nowhere else really do you see anyone actually proposing social democracy. And they released a document called the White Paper, which is their proposal for what an independent Scotland would be like. And it's basic social democracy. It has free education. It has a national health service, which is not, cannot be privatized. They're offering free childcare, which is actually would be a really, really amazing thing for women's equality and make a real difference to a lot of working class women. They're proposing a lot of decent center left stuff, but the real dynamic and interesting stuff comes not from the official Yes movement, not from the Scottish National Party, but from the kind of independent Yes campaigners. And there are loads and loads of groups which have set up pretty much spontaneously, and some of them include the Radical Independence Campaign, which is sort of, it's not party political, but it has a lot of Greens and a lot of socialists in it and a lot of anarchists, a range of just sort of left of center people who are trying to use the opportunity of Scottish independence to push a much more radical political agenda and also to increase engagement. So the most important thing Rick has been doing is mass canvassing in deprived working class areas. People who have not ever voted, who have never been spoken to by a politician in their lives, are going around and knocking on doors and registering people to vote and saying, this is your opportunity to go and tell those bastards what you think of them and to take power back into your own hands and never ever let it go again. To use this opportunity to completely seize power and make Scotland a different country where the people are genuinely sovereign. It's not just an elite transition to a different ruling class. Then there is Commonweal, which is a project of something called the Jimmy Reid Foundation, which is also a really inspiring, I guess, think tank of what kind of country Scotland should be in. And they have some really good quality policy on everything from sort of digital freedoms and things along the kind of Icelandic model of the International Modern Media Institute that Iceland has of guaranteeing freedoms from surveillance and privacy and all that kind of thing, to industrial policy, having like a really, really good strong policy on trade unions, to things on living wage and on green jobs, on currency, and a lot of really, really interesting ideas. There's Women for Independence, there's Scottish Asians for Yes, there's English Scots for Yes, there's Africans for Independence, there's Green Yes, there's just this plethora of groups which have sprung up. And essentially what's happened is that lots and lots of people in Scotland who've never been politically active before have become experts in their particular field of interest. Mm-hmm. So if it's technology or land reform or whatever it is, these people have become absolute experts in that particular field, and they're determined to use the independence referendum as an opportunity to advance that particular cause as much as possible. Essentially because independence seems to mean basically a chink in the neoliberal armor. There's no guarantee at all that if Scotland votes yes, that things will be better. However, suddenly for the first time, there is an actual alternative. There is the actual possibility to reboot and start the country again from scratch and do things entirely differently. And for that reason, I'm very, very keen on the referendum and very much in favour of a yes vote, because I really do think it is an opportunity to do things fundamentally differently. Nothing to do with nationalism, nothing to do with flags. As you can hear by my accent, I'm South African, I'm not Scottish. A lot of the people supporting the Yes campaign are not Scottish at all, have no interest in stereotypical ideas of Scottish nationalism. It's not about that at all. It's about local democracy, taking control of your country, taking control of your neighbourhood, and making it that into a place that puts all of us first, that puts people first. And I think it's an opportunity we can't afford to miss.
That sounds really great. And I mean, I know there are a number of people that are questioning what's going on, because some have said that independence movements in other countries have become divergent and have split lefts and has split movements. And a lot of the cases, as independence eventually happens, everything's built up to that point and then it just stops. Mm-hmm. And so what can you say to about that? Because it seems like there have been many independence movements. I mean, let's look at the Commonwealth Games, which is coming up in the next 2 weeks, and how many of those countries are now independent nations from the UK or from England. Mm-hmm. And many of them seem to be fine, financially speaking. Mm-hmm. And I know, just to settle one thing, that, again, this is nothing new for independence. If a vote were to happen and they were to vote in favor, there would be negotiations. Mm-hmm. About what is what and how things are determined. Hopefully it doesn't do what Spain did, which is give the countries complete debts. Because, I mean, I know that many countries in Latin America are still paying off debts to Spain in some form or another. So what can you say about those concerns about other independence movements and how this one is different? Or is it?
Yeah, it is different. And I don't think that people who are campaigning for yes think that by voting yes, things will change. I think they realize that by voting yes, they can create the conditions which allow change to happen, but it will require continued civic engagement. And slowly the mainstream media has begun to take notice of this, and they've begun referring to something which they call Third Scotland. It's not party political, it's not official, no, it's not the official Yes campaign, but it's a movement of people who are really trying to make a political difference, and not in the established way, not by voting in political parties, but in all sorts of other kinds of campaigning. And that is not going to go away. Whatever happens in the referendum, that is not going to go away. And you can't help but notice it when you're in Scotland. I've been noticing this for months now. Like, if I go to the bus stop or I get on a bus or I'm walking down the street, I hear people talking to each other about politics in a way that I've never really heard before, except maybe in South Africa at around about the time of the first democratic election. But strangers are talking to each other on public transport about politics, and it's quite inspiring stuff. There's a lot of really, I think all over the world, opinion polls always show that if you, people generally favor socialism. I mean, they don't usually use that word, but if you say to people, are you in favor of free education, free healthcare, all that kind of stuff, people really like that kind of, people are totally in favor of that. And suddenly, people are discussing these issues amongst themselves and saying, hey, this might actually be an opportunity to not be ruled by aristocrats and the House of Lords and this distant elite down in London, to not have our lives dominated by bankers. And, we could actually do things differently. And there's this like awakening. There's a Scottish writer called Leslie Riddoch who's written a book called Blossom. And she argues that there is a blossoming of the democratic intellect, the democratic spirit in Scotland, and it's not going to go away. And it really is not just about Scotland being an independent country, Scotland having its own flag, Scotland finding a national anthem, all that kind of thing. It's not about that at all. It's about people realizing that there really is an opportunity to do things differently. One of the most ironic and remarkable things about the whole Scottish independence movement is that it is actually defending the things that used to make Britain great. And this is something that's really bizarre, but Britain used to have free education, and the NHS is one of the best products of the British welfare state. It was created in after the Second World War, and that has been completely sold out in England. It's been put into law that it can be privatized, which means that when TTIP, the new trade agreement, comes into play, corporations will actually be able to sue any government which stops market provision of services and all that kind of thing. And Scotland, bizarrely, has held on to the things which used to make Britain a great social welfare state. So written into Scottish law that the NHS cannot be privatized, and they in Scotland they've committed to the old parts of the of the welfare state, and it's really interesting to see that dynamic, and to see people saying that we actually don't want to live in a neoliberal country, and we think there are alternatives, and we're going to insist on them. So I really do think it is different.
That's I think that's a really good point. A lot of points for that matter. And it's interesting just to see it, because I can't remember the last really big independence movement that was capturing Europe. I think would be like some of the splits between what is it, Serbia, Herzegovina, when it was all together, and to
The Czech Republic, divorce. The splits in Belgium and in potential splits in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these are quite different. I mean, like Flanders belong in the Netherlands. I mean, in Belgium is essentially the richer part, Flanders, wanting to be rid of the poorer part. It's the same dynamic in Italy, where Liga Nord is campaigning for independence of the north, which is wealthier than the south. It's actually these are actually quite right wing movements.
Mm-hmm.
In Scotland, it's actually quite different. It's essentially a country which is very much ruled by absentee landlords, and the tenants want to evict the landlord.
Huh. Well, I don't know if there's more to really go on it. I think there's a lot out there. I think we'll put a link into the Radical Independence campaign, because I have a lot of information out there. I know I've had this discussion, and I know Kevi and McNallu and others will be interested, because we did discuss this the other night over drinks. And I, of course, being the foreigner, talking about independence is always an interesting segue. But, you know, when there's discussion of things on the left, and the left is actually actively involved in this, and not necessarily as split as lefts have been before, mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting, especially since the right is not leading this.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my feeling. Although some others may say that there are nationalists in Scotland that are, you know, vying for the right side of it, but it doesn't seem Scotland has that tendency.
I've never seen it. There are some centre right people who are pro independence, and some of the kind of business groups who see a business opportunity, but I don't think they're as powerful as the left forces who are pro independence.
Yeah, so it seems that the most of the pro maintain or pro. Unification, so to speak, or maintaining the unification, is the mainstream media. And it's just odd to see Labour and Tories on the same side of something when they should clearly be on opposing sides, if not for the fact that Cameron has said to the media, "What if Scotland breaks away, it'll break my heart." Well, fuck it, let's break his heart. That's just motivation, and I can't think of any better motivation than that. In and of itself.
And the Labour Party just completely fails to inspire in any way. They offer no vision, no alternative, which is why the Scottish National Party has been able to essentially steal their social democratic clothes and say, yeah, here's something not too radical, but let's have free healthcare, free education, and free childcare, and be a civilised country.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's the start of a longer discussion about this, because I'm sure we'll have more as September 18th comes forward. So if you're voting no, election September 19th. If you're voting yes, it's September 18th.
Yes.
Just keep that in mind. It's a very important thing to keep in mind. And also, if you're voting no, you're not able to come up here 2 weeks before from England to vote. But if you are voting yes, you can actually come up here 2 weeks before. just so you know, but the nice little details that you should be aware of.
Yes, voters, anyone who's in favor of Scottish independence, you're welcome to move to Scotland from anywhere in the world. Register to vote and vote on the 18th.
Well, not anywhere in the world. Apparently, I'm not allowed to come here because I'm American and
right.
I can't vote.
If you're Commonwealth or European, you can move to Scotland and vote yes.
So, great. Well, I think that covers our sort of now independence section instead of labor section.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll do a little bit of feedback.
Help will come whenever it's needed. Cheer, my comrades, cheer.
I wanted to actually, there are a couple of things that we've gotten a couple of new listeners. I know, McNallu, you started listening the other day, which is great. I know that we have a couple of listeners from California that have come on. Jay Sheldon, who also became a May 1st member, that has come on to listening to the show as well. So welcome, as well as to others that have discovered us because we've been away for 2 months. The other thing I really wanted to give, which I should have said in the updates, I just want to share a really good book I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
That is called Strike for America, And it's, I got this when I was in Labor Notes back in April, from, one of the editors of Jacoba magazine. So I just want to push this out there because I think it's a really phenomenal piece. I'm only halfway through it and it's not a very long read, but I'll put a link in the show notes for where you can get it, because I really want to say that the book is inspiring. It's talking about the Chicago Teachers Union and the, what it got to get them to go on the strike that they took, which was phenomenal. And really, he encompasses the story, and embraces a lot of his own experiences, because Michael was actually in Chicago at the time, so there's a lot of experiences from him on the streets, but also really good tight research into the development of what they had to do to the union, because the union was not really, it had never, had not been a left union activist group for quite some time. I'm talking decades at this point. There have been efforts to try to change it, but nothing sustainable, and it seems that their model, at least from what I've read so far, seems like it is actually pretty sustainable, and it's something that a lot of labor unions should be learning, specifically in the United States, because that's the context of where it comes from. But it inspires others around the world that have a very stiff union leadership that doesn't want to do the right thing. So again, Strike for America, it's a really, really good book. I'll put it up there on the show notes so you can all go and get it. Other than that, I don't know if there's any other feedback. I think there was some issue with our RSS stream, our feed at one point, which we now have an HTTPS and an HTTP version of it, so people can subscribe to it to their podcasting applications that are not always HTTPS friendly. Mm-hmm. But that's all I can think of for now. Do you have any?
No, that'll do.
Great.
It was an interesting experience recording across a table instead of across the internet.
Yeah, I don't know if this will ever happen again in the next year. Maybe next year it could happen, but not in the near future unless you make your way down to Mexico in the next month, mm-hmm. or to the States in the next year. So on that all, see you all when we record again, which there's no promise on when that'll be.
Mm-hmm. Good night, thank you.
Visit us at cyberunions.org. Follow us on Twitter and Identica at cyberunions, or on Reddit /r/cyberunions. You can also email us feedback or grievance at cyberunions.org. Thank you for listening.